Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgann. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGann. And if you don't mind, and if you would, give the show a follow on Twitter. And that's also at GoForItGann. Scheduled to be joined by the newest member of the Atlanta Falcons, tight end Reggie Kelly. Also, the great 11-time Pro Bowler, Willie Rofe, will come on by. And we're going to get Willie's thoughts on some of the things going on around the league, including Terrell Pryor, and also comedian Sean Broyles will be in the house, and Sean has a good book out right now. The book is titled Just Give Up, Why Nothing in Life is Worth Trying at All, Ever. Sean Broyles has a nice little book out. He has a comedy tour going on right now, and Sean's going to take some time out to talk to us about what's going on with Sean Broyles and what's going on with his book. Reggie Kelly, tight end, Atlanta Falcons, Willie Rofe, the great Willie Rofe, and comedian Sean Broyles, all here today on Go For It. Make sure you stick around and make sure you listen. Jeremy, how are you today, sir?
Sunny, Paul. Sunny. Yeah, I guess Philly's, on a roll, and the sports world is a fickle place to be these days. Last week it was Tiger Woods. This week it's Miami Hurricanes, and you mentioned Terrell Pryor. It seems like everyone's getting beat up.
It's not a good time for a lot of people. And you look at the whole situation with Terrell Pryor, and we'll start right there with Terrell Pryor. If you haven't heard, he actually is having a workout today, his pro day today, Greenburg, Pennsylvania, is the location. But Terrell Pryor, he will be eligible. He is eligible for the supplemental draft, which will be on Monday. But if drafted, Terrell Pryor will have to sit out a minimum of 5 games, the first 5 weeks of the season. The first 5 weeks of the season, for what the NFL is quoted as saying, and this is the quote from the NFL, Terrell Pryor made decisions that undermine the integrity of the eligibility rules for the NFL draft. And one of his actions apparently is hiring an agent, they say, which is in violation of NCAA rules. We all know that. And failure to cooperate with the investigation that cost Ohio State coach Jim Tressel his job. So basically, Terrell Pryor is being suspended for what he did in college. He's being suspended for what he did in college. That cannot be fair. There's nothing fair about that one. He is being suspended for something that he did in college. That is not fair. That's unfair. That's truly unfair and just not right. Why is Terrell Pryor basically? But hold on. Let's get the history behind it. If you remember, Terrell Pryor, a few other guys from Ohio State, they signed a document. In order for them to play in the Sugar Bowl, they had to sign a document saying that they would return for their senior season, and in their senior season, they were to be suspended for 5 games. But, obviously, Terrell Pryor decided to turn pro, and now he's in the NFL, or is about to be in the NFL, and for his sake, hopefully, he gets drafted on Monday. But I'm saying this. Yes, what he did in college was wrong. He broke the rules, but a lot of people break the rules. Pete Carroll. When the stuff was about to hit the fan, and in USC. Where did Pete Carroll go? Where did Pete Carroll go? He went to the NFL and went to the Seattle Seahawks. He went to the Seattle Seahawks. Jim Tressel, he resigned, and ultimately he'll go on to greener pastures. But guys like Reggie Bush have to pay. He loses his Heisman. Guys like Terrell Pryor has to pay. He misses five games once drafted. This is not fair. There's something wrong here. And let me just add one more point. Let me add one more point before you step in. Terrell Pryor, as a sophomore at Ohio State, the football revenue for Ohio State for that year, $63.8 million in football revenue. $63.8 million in football revenue. Terrell Pryor did not get a dime of that money.
First of all, the money is irrelevant. The only point you made that had any semblance of intelligence was the Reggie Bush example. I mean, again, Paul, what he did, you went along the course of actions. He said that if he was allowed to play in the Sugar Bowl, that he would serve a 5-game suspension. So whether the suspension is to be served in college, but he's shirking his collegiate responsibility by being a man, serving a suspension.
Oh.
Paul, what he did was A, wrong. I will say this. In regards to these college athletes, the biggest problem is, and we're seeing it in Miami, which we'll certainly get into later, but, the point you should have made with the revenues is, the athlete of today, what they're doing is, they're especially in college football, that's the mini pro league at this point. And so, you walk into these universities that are making tens of millions of dollars per year on these athletes and handing them, yes, a college education, but we all well know, Terrell Pryor was not going to the University of Ohio without a college scholarship. So there needs to be, a greater, and the fact is, the University of Ohio profits 28 million-fold on Terrell Pryor. So there should be some remuneration because athletes are asked to do the impossible.
The Ohio State University definitely has profited off of Terrell Pryor, no doubt about it. And again, like we'll get to in the Miami situation, I don't blame these guys for what's going on. I mean, you look at it, these are guys that are basically pros in a pro environment, essentially. These guys are pros in a pro environment making pro-type money for the university and not for themselves, and it's not fair. It's not fair, and I don't have the answers, again, in terms of coming up with a system that would be fair. There's a lot of other people out here that make a whole heck of a lot of money to come up with those type of systems. I don't have the bearing power or to come up with something of that type. But I will say this, and I just think you look at this whole situation with Terrell Pryor. He, in some respect, I want to say he's the victim here. He is the victim. Terrell Pryor is the victim. And you look at it, again, everybody is making money off of his back. The Ohio State University made a whole heck of a lot of money off his back. Everybody is making money off his back. Jim Tressel made a whole heck of a lot of money off his back. 100,000+ people come and pack the stadium each and every week to see Terrell Pryor. At least they did. This guy, to me, is the victim. He is the victim here. He is the victim. And everybody is blaming the kids. The kids always get the blame. The Reggie Bushes of the world always get the blame. The Terrell Pryors of the world always get the blame. The system is dirty. The whole thing is dirty. Everybody is cheating. It's just like speeding. Everybody speeds. It's just as a matter of who gets caught. And who speeds the most and who speeds the worst. I just think right now, you look at this whole situation with Terrell Pryor, this is not fair. And there has been talk that he may appeal this agreement. But the reality is, This is not fair. And for anybody to say that this is fair, to me, is unfair. It's just not fair what's happening to Terrell Pryor. Let's bring in now 11-time Pro Bowler, the great Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Hey, it's not how you speed, Jeremy. You got to keep speeding with the pack. You just can't pull ahead of the pack and run off and leave everybody. As long as you're speeding and you're going with the flow of traffic out in California, everybody's driving 80. You just got to drive 80 with them. You can't drive 90.
Well, I mean well, let's get your serious thoughts on Terrell Pryor, as Paul's contending the fairness, or is he being singled out in a league that's known to single out not just collegiate players, but I mean the NFL is known to make a rule of everyone.
You know, I was very surprised at what they did. I don't really know if, you know, this commissioner is trying to, you know, Roger Goodell is trying to, you know, set a new precedent. And I agree with you, Jeremy. It seems like they're making an example out of Terrell Pryor. I mean, let's face it. Like you said, these colleges are making a lot of money off these athletes. A lot of athletes are making some money under the table. Even if you pay those guys a couple thousand or whatever they're talking about doing, as much money as those coaches are making and college athletics is making, it's still going to happen. So it's just who can get away with it and who can do it without it being, you know, it being so obvious. Okay, and then right. It's about what player comes later on down the road who doesn't make it to the NFL or whatever happens to him and then comes out and talks about it. You know, you have a lot of those guys that are bitter, but obviously it's being done. The NCAA can monitor it, but I don't know if I agree with Roger Goodell going and suspending the guy that never is still an amateur athlete.
And the way also I look at it, Willie, I think this is a case of Roger Goodell doing this. Protecting his free minor league system, which is college football. He's protecting it. I mean, it's a free minor league system. What do you think about that?
Well, I agree with you on the minor league system, but I went to Louisiana Tech. And when I played at Louisiana Tech, we were just going to Division I. We had some success. And it's like, and I went to a small school. Everybody thinks they're going pro. And you know, guys, it doesn't work like that. So, you know, these guys need to be prepared for real life after football. You have a couple guys off some of these squads that are going to have a chance to go pro. And at best, Terrell Pryor might be a pro quarterback. If not, they're going to move him to receiver probably, which is all the experts are saying anyway. So, he is trying to protect the system and protect these guys. But I think these coaches and stuff have to do a better job of preparing these guys not to think they're going pro in sports and preparing them to try to work on getting their degree and, you know, including myself and make sure that these guys, you know, guys are prepared to do something when football runs out. Because, like you guys know, it's not but a small percentage of them are going to make it to the next level.
Well, but Will, you're sounding, first of all, slow down because that's too intelligent for A, the audience, and B, this discussion, because you know as well as anybody, you said it, that's the biggest problem in college athletics is that they entice you to play football, to play basketball, to play baseball in the belief that you're going to go even to University of Ohio. I mean, the sad part is, even in a good draft class, and you know this, a good school has 5, 7, maybe 9 players in a draft class, getting to a draft, but how many of the people in the draft make it on the team? 3? So, you know, the numbers are staggering, yet college athletes have done nothing, or college athletics has done nothing to forge not just education, but to make sure that these athletes, if they're at least going to be compensated for the fact that they're really, when you're done college and your major is basket weaving because you went to UCLA, or you went to UNLV and played basketball, you might as well not even went to college.
You make a great point, and I was very surprised. My agent, Lamar Smith, his son is playing AAU basketball, and a couple weeks they were out here in California when the real good guys were in Vegas. Like these kids go on tour, starting like, you know, 6th, 7th grade, and I went over there to the Anaheim Sports Arena. and they had 30 courts, man, with all these kids playing. I mean, 7 footers, 6'10". I mean, it was unbelievable how organized this is now, and how they were saying that was the B tournament. The real good players were in Vegas at the time, and it, I mean, the way these kids are going around and doing all this stuff, it's like they get accustomed to living this dream, you know, when they're young kids, and they just, it's like a factory, you know what I mean? And it's the same thing's going on with these college football players and athletics. And you know, I'm just glad when I came through, it was more, I didn't go to the big school, but it was just more about going to college, having fun, you know, taking care of your books, make sure you're going to study hall, most of the guys, and trying to get the degree. But it was just about playing football and having fun. I mean, it wasn't about, you know, what am I setting myself up to try to get to the next level? Because it takes a lot to even make it to the next level and even stay at the next level. Which, you know, we had four guys drafted in my class and then one guy that played a few years. So, you know, for Tech, I mean, I think that's never happened before other than in my class. We had, you know, five guys go pro that year, you know, and a couple of us played for a few years. But like you said, they're sending the wrong message, and we need to try to collect the message that you're sending to these guys, even going to the high school ranks.
And Willie, you look at it. I mean, is this a case now where Roger Goodell just has too much power? And you would think, and I thought maybe in this latest CBA they would try to take away some of his power when it comes to disciplining guys with this personal conduct policy. But is this a case of Roger Goodell just having too much power?
I don't know if you say it's too much power. I think it's a case of two of what the owners want done. I think this is a case of Roger Goodell doing what they brought him in there to do. They wanted a more disciplined guy. The owners are dealing with all these athletes, especially the black athletes, and they want to send a message to them that if you're going to play in this league, you're going to abide and do things to a certain standard. I don't think it's a matter of maybe Roger Goodell doing too much. I think Roger Goodell is doing what they want him to do, and that's what they brought him in for. And you know, the owners are the ones running the league, so I can't put it all on Roger Goodell. I know he's a commissioner, but I think it's a bigger authority there than Roger Goodell also.
But wouldn't you have thought that the players would collectively have bargained this time around to kind of limit some of his power, to have somebody else hear, outside arbiter, hear a case where guys getting disciplined, like a Pac-Man Jones, his situation, or other situations out there? Wouldn't you have thought the players might have tried to block that a little more this time around?
Well, you think, the players tried to block what they could block, but when it came down to the end of it and now they're trying to get back in and make a living, the players want to keep their jobs and want to keep stuff afloat. Just take for instance, Kevin Mowry was still playing at a high level, and the Titans let him go, probably because he's part of that NFL player rep, and the guy, outstanding football player I played with, was part of the NFL executive committee, Brian Waters, and the Chiefs released him, he's not even in the league right now. I mean, they had that guy, number 67 in the top 100 this last year. He's a Pro Bowler, and he can't even get, you know, unless they just offered him the minimum, he doesn't want to play. But I'm telling you, man, when you get on some of these committees and do some of that stuff, they, you know, the best thing for you to do if you want to just play football like Willie, just go in there and play hard, keep your nose clean. Don't get on any of these boards. Don't get on any of these committees, because I'm telling you, man, when they get a chance, I mean, you're going to play football. I mean, they don't want you doing all that stuff. They want you to go in and play football, make your money, and go home, man. I mean, it's a tough situation, you know.
Definitely. We're talking to Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler. And Willie, this past week you had Michael Vick in a GQ article basically saying that he didn't want to come to Philly, and the league basically convinced him and basically told him to come to Philly. He later clarified those statements. But, Willie, would the commissioner do that? would the commissioner put a player in a certain position, in a certain place with a certain team?
I mean, they can try to push him to that spot. I mean, I don't think he can put. They can put. You know, he could sign with someone else. But honestly, I think the best thing he did was go to Philly, and it's worked out great for him. I mean, but obviously, it was on. I think the other night it was on his mind a little bit. You know, you make those statements, and you know, you talk to GQ, and then you got to go perform. Then you got a contract situation. He's trying to get a new contract. You know, the pressure's on him. You know, and I mean, it's gonna be last year. What he do 6-7 picks or whatever? The first 10 games, he hardly do any picks. It's hard to play at that level, and it's good to get this out in the preseason, but. Philly was the right spot for him. He got comeback player of the year. He's making $15-16 million this year. He's gonna, probably get a new contract. So, I mean, what Michael Vick needs to do is keep doing what he's doing, working hard, making sure his image is clean, and being a good person in society and playing football, and making a good living right now.
But Willie, I mean, in all reality, though, I mean, here's another case in point where, I mean. Certainly, I think what he said probably it should have been better contested. But I mean, is that a big deal that the league tried to help a player, that the league tried to say to him, hey, don't make the same mistakes that you're prone to make. Go and sit on the bench, you know, heal your image, and go to a team and an organization that can put you probably in a year or two in the best situation for you. I mean, what did the league do wrong here? Here's, I think, where the league is getting – they're saying they were trying to fix things, they were trying to hurt things. No one knew if Michael Vick was going to succeed better in Philadelphia than he would have in Buffalo.
We're not going to say he would have succeeded better, but I think he had a better core unit around him. He has better players and a better organization than Buffalo or going to Cincinnati. I mean, Michael, if you want to tell me before, it's Michael Vick, if I'm his advisor, forget the NFL, and I'm talking to Michael Vick, and it's between Buffalo, Cincinnati, and Philadelphia, even if you are coming to sit on the bench and you don't know what's going to happen with McNabb and Cobb and all this, because Cobb has just got an extension, it would have been hard to say go to Buffalo or Cincinnati over going to the Philadelphia Eagles. And it all worked out for him. So, obviously, it was the right decision. I mean, Cincinnati has too many issues, too many guys that are getting in trouble and all that stuff that was going on up there. And so, you know, I think it worked out because it would have been Buffalo or Philadelphia. I mean, that's not a hard choice.
Buffalo and Cincinnati, you look at it. Michael Vick wasn't ready to play year one. He was not ready to play when he first stepped on the scene. He wasn't in the same type of shape that he was last year. He wasn't ready to play.
No, he wasn't.
He was not ready.
And that's. I mean, my point was, I really do think, I think the league, certainly, and that's what I said, I think the league tried to recognize that they didn't need Michael Vick coming in, and he was playing right away in Buffalo. I mean, they're putting him. Within 2 weeks, he's going in their lineup at that point. So I think at some point you do have to recognize what is so wrong with a league that actually champions a player, that actually does the right thing, counsels this player, and says, listen, the money may be there for you, may be better for you in one instance, but you haven't played football. I mean, you're not conditioned. So, I mean, in Philadelphia is a place with a great offensive coach, Monty Morningway, great offensive coordinator. They pumped out quarterbacks. So why not commend the commissioner and commend the league for helping a player not just rehabilitate, you know, his image, but certainly revolutionize his game?
Well, if you want to be now, that works two ways now. You want to commend the league for helping him get him to Philly and do certain things, controlling the situation, while also the league saying, okay, we did a good job with Michael Vick. We helped guide him to Philadelphia. Look at him. He got comeback player of the year. He's doing great. It's great for the league. It's a great image. His jersey's selling. Everything's great. All right. On the flip side of that, we're going to go and deal with a guy like Terrell Pryor in college, and we're going to show him that when he comes in this league, he's going to have to abide by our rules and do what we want and make sure he keeps his image and does the things right when he gets to the next level. So that's what's happening. So you want to commend the league. Well, the league's going to do stuff on both points then. Because if you're saying, yeah, they did a great job with Michael Vick, they're sending a message to Terrell Pryor, and they're sending a message to these college athletes saying that if they go and do stuff and get in trouble on the college level now, you can be held accountable in the NFL. So basically they're sending a message to let you know, even on the collegiate level, that you just can't get away and just do whatever, and then you leave a program. I know what you're saying about Ohio State, you know, made all this money and stuff, but, Jim Tressel lost his job, and all this stuff, all these changes will happen at that university, and eventually some of this stuff would have came out. It's just sad that it's going on, and obviously these colleges are going to have to tighten up rank on and not do as much as they used to with some of these college athletes. I mean, it might hurt the program, but, I mean, you just can't go out and give a guy money or just – Terrell Pryor, for instance, I mean, what did they say? He had 8 cars in 2 or 3 years. I mean, a guy can't go to a car lot every couple months and just pick out a new car. I mean, that's what guys are doing in the league. Guys in the league, don't need to be doing that. But, you go through all those cars in 2 or 3 years, I mean, somebody's going to talk about it sooner or later.
That's very true. And I think ultimately that led to his downfall and the whole situation. With Ohio State, and Willie, we're talking about Michael Vick, and we're talking about the Philadelphia Eagles, the dream team, as some have called them. They were blasted by the Steelers' first team, and they were down 21-0 at halftime. Michael Vick, 3 picks in that first half. Have we overrated this Eagle team, or is it just preseason?
No, we have, it's the preseason. The Eagles looked good the first week. Pittsburgh didn't play so good the first week. So when they went to play the Steelers, we're playing at home. We got our home fans. We need to put on a good showing to make our fans proud. So the Steelers went out there and did what they had to do. Now, is it a wake-up call? Yeah, it's a wake-up call because, if you're going to play one of these tough teams with these tough defenses, Michael Vick's going to have to be on point. So that's the best thing that can happen to him. Get in that film room, see where your mistakes were, learn from them, and get back to the drawing board. It's a grind. The NFL is a grind. It's hard to play at that level year in, year out. That's why you have guys that play at a high level for a long time and guys that go to a few Pro Bowls and don't go consistently. I mean, it's a tough league. So he just got to get in there, get in that film room and study. And, it's going to be a little harder to do what he did last year. And like you said, you're going to need Macklin back and all those guys, all those weapons back to help him spread that ball around so the defense doesn't key on him and having a consistent running game too.
And so I agree with you. I thought it was just a matter. It's preseason. I think sometimes we all get caught up in certain performances in the preseason. Preseason, I mean, Willie, how did you handle the preseason as a player?
Well, guys, I was blessed to be a very good athlete. And as long as I made sure, my weight, if I felt good, I was in good shape, going to the chiropractor, getting massages, taking care, especially when I got older. But my thing was being around 310, 315, whatever. I just took the preseason as a time to make sure that I was in good football shape, make sure that I was working on my fundamentals, because during the year you're going to lose it a little bit, as far as your kicking and stuff like that. You might step underneath yourself sometime and you try to work it back. But then you have injuries during the season that you have to fight through, and you're just trying to go through week to week. If you're not practicing, it makes you ready for the game anyway. But my thing for the preseason was just to stay healthy and make sure that I was working on, make sure I was, my body was feeling good. I was at the right weight and making sure I was ready to play. If I went out there and a guy got me a little bit in the preseason, I would think about it. I would go out there and practice and maybe work hard on my one-on-ones or, make sure I was punching good with my hands. Sometimes you didn't punch as good for a lineman. I'm saying from a lineman's point of view. And make sure that I kept on my fundamentals. But the key to me was just making it through the preseason feeling fresh for the regular season. I mean, I wasn't during the season. I mean, the guys know me, that sometimes if we out there practicing too long, I'll just go out there and kind of go through the motions, and they just take me out of practice because you know I want to be fresh on Sunday. So my thing was just staying healthy and doing everything I need to do to make sure my body felt good.
And on that note, Willie, so this was good then that the players in your mind got in their negotiations that they ended some of the mandatory camps, ended the 2-a-days, and they got some more rest, you know, during the training camps and during the season. This was for the next 10 years then, this was a smart business decision, you know, if you're an athlete, to get your body that rest for those Sundays.
Yeah, it is. I think it is good. No, remember I talked to you guys a couple of weeks ago and I said I think guys are going to be a fresher. Well, I didn't realize with guys not being on the field as much and not taping their ankles and getting used to the twisting and turning and all these Achilles injuries that was going to happen this year. But, you still need to do your functional football stuff in the offseason. You need to go out there and run around and put on your cleats and get on the field because, like we saw, if you take too much time off of that, some guys are having problems adjusting to your body being so big and twisting and turning, you know, with the cleats on. You know, obviously you're going to be moving your Achilles and stuff around and your foot and all that stuff. So, I didn't realize it was going to be so many Achilles injuries, but I think it's going to be good if guys go through the off-season program and are doing their drills and running and working hard. They're doing their stuff and then not having all those tour days, man. If some of the guys I know could have played, you know, went through some of these training camps, I mean, they would have played, a few more years. And I'm talking about guys that played over 10 years. So I think it's good. It's good for the guys that their bodies can hold up and they can play a long time. You know, I mean, you're going to have issues during the season, like, you know, getting beat up some. But, you know, yeah, it's going to work out real good for the players.
And Willie, maybe you can make your comeback.
No, I'm 41, man. No comebacks. I'm just gonna keep going to the gym and getting on the elliptical and doing my little bit of cardio and lifting a little weights. I think that's enough comeback for me. I go in the gym and feel good doing my workout.
And Willie, we had the situation with Mark Sanchez also in a GQ article. He said last year at one point he wanted to fight Rex Ryan. First of all, that seems pretty normal to me. I think everybody at some point wants to fight their boss. But is this type of thing pretty common in the NFL?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have coaches and players and bickering and fussing and fighting on the sideline. Yeah, I mean, these guys, they talking these articles and blowing out, blow some of this stuff out of proportion. I mean, you've had Mac Millen, the quarterback in Chicago, and, you know, obviously Trent. You know, Trent didn't want to fight Vermeil. Vermeil's like everybody's father. But, you know, you're going to have some bickering and stuff that goes along with it. And Mark Sanchez is still learning the position and, you know, learning how to play, you know, week in, week out. And like a lot of guys, so everything's not going to be perfect every week. So, yeah, that's just part of the game.
And one thing real quickly, Willie, had the situation yesterday. Thomas Jones, Jonathan Baldwin had a little fight in the locker room, according to some reports. According to some reports, Baldwin had a wrist injury. How common is that? How common is players fighting in the locker room?
Thomas Jones for the
Chiefs.
For the Chiefs? Yeah, I didn't know about that. Well, it's not as common as it is not in the locker room. I think it's a little more common if guys are out hanging out, drinking, or, gambling a little bit and stuff outside the locker room. But in the locker room, nah, it doesn't really go on as much in the locker room well. And hopefully it's not, you know, maybe it's something they'll carry on from practice field and carry on into the locker room, you know, as long as it's not external stuff, you know, a lot of guys dealing with these girls and, you know, and gambling and some of this other stuff, then that's, you know, I can do. But as long, maybe it was something happened in practice that led into it. But, you know, I don't know. You guys know what athletics, you know, in these cities, you know. You go out to the club and you see a cute girl 9 times, and she's in the city, you know, especially like Kansas City. 9 times out of 10, she's probably dated or hung out with some of the guys on the team. So, you know, you can't take some of that stuff personal. You just have to, you know, if you want to deal with it, deal with it and do what you got to do. But, you know, you can't take that stuff personal. And if you're talking about gambling, then you just, they don't need to be gambling with each other anymore.
Right. Willie, as always, sir, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Definitely look forward to hearing you a lot more during the NFL season. Take care, sir.
All right, man. Y'all have a good one.
All right. Take care, Willie.
Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler, former Kansas City Chief, former New Orleans Saints offensive tackle and star, and a guy that many believe has a great shot to be in the 2012 Hall of Fame class. So we'll definitely see what happens there with the great Willie Rofe. And a lot of interesting things he said, especially about Terrell Pryor. And I want to add one more thing to that, and I think with this whole Terrell Pryor situation, I think bottom line, what this comes down to is this. The NFL, Roger Goodell, the NFL is trying to protect their free minor league system. That free minor league system is college football. And you got to protect it if you're the NFL. And in some respect, I don't agree with it, but on some level, maybe this is a smart move by Roger Goodell, because maybe it sets a precedent, which the league is denying, but maybe it does set a precedent and say, you know what, if you're going to mess around in college and do some unsavory things in college, guess what? You may pay for it on the NFL level. We're going to protect our free minor league system. We are going to protect that. We're going to protect it. And I think
well, Paul, is there anything? There's two problems with that. Is there anything wrong with someone protecting the value when they see, you know, when they see its worth? And number two, I will say this: you have to remember, these are the same athletes that are walking into this league, and Willie just spoke on it. You know, with this complex and with a league now that wants to set the certain message, it's best set then as early as possible. If you can get this message down now to Terrell Pryor, now maybe you're going to get juniors and seniors that are looking to be draft eligible to remember, you know what, I now am a theoretical draft eligible player, and certainly I think I can get into the pros. I better watch my step here, because the last thing I want to do is walk into the league and have a 2-game suspension, a 5-game suspension. That puts me off of a second, third, or first-round draft to a fifth, sixth, or in Terrell Pryor's case, supplemental.
Well, in a lot of ways, I mean, the whole situation in general, I mean, any time in college, even if you want to be in a working world, you do have to watch some of the things that you do, because if you do something that's criminal, it could follow you. But last I checked here, Terrell Pryor did not do anything criminal. And Terrell Pryor did not break the law here. He did not break the law here. So let's be clear about that. He did not break the law. So we're holding something against him for breaking, I guess, NCAA rules and NCAA rules and NCAA, which essentially, if you don't want to say it, that's fine. But essentially, it is the minor league system for the NFL. It is the minor league system for the NFL, and basketball is the minor league system for the NBA. The NBA has their own little thing, the D League. But this college basketball is essentially a minor league system. It's a minor league system, and it's a free minor league system. So Roger Goodell and those boys are going to do what they got to do to take care of that situation and to protect that minor league system. And I don't necessarily agree with it, but I truly do understand, and I think that is the case, and I think that's why Roger Goodell did what he did here in this situation. I truly think that's why he did it. And another situation, another scandal in college football, you have the situation with Miami football, University of Miami, apparently from 2002 to 2010. They had a booster, Mr. Nevin Shapiro, who's actually a convicted felon and was convicted of a nine $130 million Ponzi scheme, and he's serving 20 years in prison for it. But according to Shapiro, he provided yachts, he provided his mansion, he provided money for 72 Miami football players, football and basketball players, for 72 Miami football players and Miami basketball players. He provided all these different types of things, prostitutes, yachts, free mansions, things of that nature. He provided for these guys over that period of time. Now, a lot of people were, you know, you got a lot of people coming out against him, against this guy, and can you believe him? He is a convicted felon. Can you believe it? I believe it. I don't know. He may have an axe to grind, but I think I do believe him, because there's nothing surprises me when it comes to college athletics and some of the things that transpires there. But if you look at it, Miami could be in line for the death penalty, and that would be a big-time blow to their new coach, Al Golden. I mean, that would be a big-time blow to that situation. Jeremy, what's your thoughts on this Miami scandal?
Well, I mean, I think, Paul, you one thing that you said, and I agree with, is that you have to kind of believe this gentleman. And I will say this. If this isn't a cry, I guess I'll use the term a cry for help in college football, I don't know what is. And I say that because you have to realize it just seems right now to be one after the other after the other. And these are big mega programs that are, I mean, really dealing with something that it's unless these college athletes get some form of payment of excess, it will never go away. It's a disease. It's an infection. What they're going to do, talk of this death penalty to Miami, will scare none of the athlete themselves. Does not suffer from that. They will find other colleges to go to. The only party on the death penalty that gets hurt is the institution, which essentially, again, had no control over this. Miami University could not control what these athletes are doing. And to think that any coach could control what their players are doing off the field when these boosters are giving them, you know, money, gifts, cars, tickets, whatever they want, it's unrealistic. So what college athletics has to do is start to realize this has been a problem from the 70s. I mean, Paul, this goes back to one of ESPN's documentaries, in that this has been around for far too long in college athletics, and they turn a blind eye. They suspend, they will take Heisman trophies away from Reggie Bush, but, I mean, so he doesn't have the actual trophy, it doesn't mean that his play on the field didn't warrant him the Heisman Trophy. Now they're talking about shutting down a college athletics program, or football program in Miami that was theoretically one of the better programs of recent times. And doing that does what? It stains the image of Miami University. It does nothing to the players that were involved in this.
Well, again, does it? I mean, do you have retribution? A la the situation with Terrell Pryor on some level, do guys like Antrell Roll, whose name was popped up, his guys like Willis McGahee, whose name popped up, just to name a few, I mean, Andre Johnson, whose name popped up, I mean, Vincent Warfolk, do they have to pay something back, or do these guys get suspended by Roger Goodell for what they did here? I mean, does that happen? I don't think so. I doubt it. But you look at the situation and you say to yourself, I mean, it's not surprising. It's definitely not surprising that this happened. That's not surprising. That's not really the surprising part of it all. I mean, it's the reality of the situation. That's not surprising. That really is not surprising. And anybody that is surprised by this, you know, needs some kind of counseling or needs to have their head examined. This is not surprising. It's not surprising at all what happened here and what goes on in college sports in general. It's not surprising. And, again, just like Terrell Pryor is the victim, I think on some level some of these kids become the victim. They become the victim on some level, and the reason is, I mean, if you look at it, and granted, it's no excuse. You know what you need to do. You know right from wrong. But you look at it, I mean, if I throw money, if I throw clothes and I throw hoes, money, clothes, and hoes, all a brother knows to steal a little bit from Biggie Smalls. But if you throw that at a young 18, 19, 20-year-old kid, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? And especially if you come from nothing. Just say you come from nothing. What are you going to do? Are you going to walk away from that, or are you going to, you know what, hey, man, 100,000 people come to see me each and every week. Hey, man, my jerseys are being sold, but I'm not getting nothing for it. Hey, man, my university is making a whole heck of a lot of money off of me, and only thing I'm getting is education, which probably is not even valued by the university or myself on some level. I came here to play football. If you look at all those things, if you're a kid and all those different things are going through your mind, guess what you're going to probably do? You're going to probably take the money. You're going to take the money. You're going to take the clothes, and you're going to take all the girls and the parties on the yachts and the parties at the mansions. You're going to take all these things. You're going to do it. You're going to do it. So I think on some level, the kids become the victim. They're the victim here.
Well, I mean, but Paul, I will say that it's not, I mean, and that's why I go back to, I think you say the kid, I look at it as the university. I look at Miami University as the true victim. I mean, the scholarships that they have to offer will just go to other colleges. They're real, I mean, I don't see, I think if your comment then is that, you know, they missed that Miami experience, or it's a shame because, you know, they have a wonderful school. Most of those athletes that were going to be scholars or that had scholarships, they're going to transfer to other universities, or they will go and into the draft early or so on and so forth. It really, the shame of it will be 3 years down the line, 4 years down the line, when you look at how the impact of that happens on admissions to Miami, how they lose television revenues. Because when you draw up football for a college of their stature, people actually make the choice to go to Miami University because they are, while they're not college athletes, because I want to be a Hurricane. You take the Hurricane away and it's gone. I mean, you know, they're and that matters to me. So I look at it and say, who benefits there? This is the only victim here is the institution, which has no control. There, I mean, I see it as impossible to contain. That's why I call it a virus. You know, I think it's like an addiction. You can't, unless you make some major changes to an entire system, it will never be solved.
And it's a tough situation, obviously. With anything, you're always going to have scandal with any type of situation. But I really don't have the answer in terms of paying these guys, because while football and some universities is making money, there are some universities who are losing money with football. So not everybody is making $63.5 million like Ohio State did last season. Not everybody is doing that 2 seasons ago, excuse me. Not everybody is making that type of money. Not every program is making that type of money. It's not happening. Not everybody is making all that money. They're not. Not everybody is eating the way people think they are. Not every college program is eating the way they think they are. But I look at this, and Luther Campbell, one of the members of Two Live Crew, one of the guys who was heavily involved in the Miami program back in the 80s and 90s, Luther Campbell said this, and these are his quotes. Furthermore, the recent scandals at Ohio State, Oregon, North Carolina, and any other major school shows it is virtually impossible to keep tabs on what every single student-athlete is up to. You can't punish them because they're acting their age. Seriously, what 19- or 20-year-old would turn down free drinks at a nightclub or a boat outing on Biscayne Bay? Those are the words of Luther Campbell, Two Live Crew, a guy who was involved in the Miami program. And also, Nevin Shapiro called himself Little Luke. So basically saying that he was just like Luther Campbell, involved in the Miami program, but Luther Campbell has definitely distanced himself from this guy and from this whole scandal. But I look at this and I say, you know what? What 19-year-old, he's right, what 19, 18-year-old kid would do that, would turn down free drinks? What 19, 20-year-old kid, what 25, 26, 27-year-old person would turn down free drinks? I mean, what 19, 18-year-old kid would turn down free drinks? What 19, 18-year-old kid would turn down a free outing on a boat? They wouldn't do it. What kid would do that? No kid. No kid would do that. And I wouldn't say no kid, but it's a very hard thing for any kid to turn away from that type of temptation that's out there. And again, these kids, they're celebrities on the camp, on the college campuses, and basically celebrities throughout the country, basically. I mean, everybody sees these guys on TV each and every Saturday. They're recognizable. Their faces are recognizable. And in college towns, they become pro athletes, basically. So these guys, essentially pro athletes, essentially making pro money for the university and doing pro things for the university, these guys are the guys that are getting shut out. These are the guys that are getting none of the money that's coming in. Is it fair? Is it foul? I mean, it doesn't seem right, but at the same time, how do you fix this system? How does this system get fixed? Who fixes this system, and what do they do to fix this system? It is definitely broke, but it's one thing to say it's broke, and it's another thing to come up with a solution, a plausible solution to this whole situation. I don't have one here. I don't have one. Maybe you can give some sort of extra monies or some kind of stipend. Maybe. Maybe you can come up with something along those lines. I don't know. I don't have a system that would work. But I do say this. I do say this. The system is obviously and definitely broke. It is broke. And it needs to be fixed, you know, but I don't have the answers.
Well, but a lot of – I mean, I don't think anyone says that they – if there were answers. I mean, the obvious thing, though, is, you know, and I think Miami is a good place to start here, which is a shame because you're seeing the commissioner of college athletics come out and talk about, you know, using the death penalty. And that's sad for a lot of reasons because this is a good platform for someone – of stature to walk out and recognize that there is this is an epidemic. This is not a problem that they can identify and say it's a group of these type or it's a group of this dynamic or the problem is X. They can't identify. The problem is rampant in college. It doesn't matter if it's college basketball, college baseball, college hockey. If it's successful, if it makes money, then it will be infected. And especially when you look at these programs where there's hundreds of millions of dollars on the line in television revenues, you know, in packages, in lux. I mean, most of these college stadiums now, they're having themselves named or they have luxury boxes. I mean, we talk about, you know, especially college football being a mini pro league. Well, I mean, last time I checked, Paul, a semi-pro team gets paid, and there's been talk of, you know, do college athletes, in addition to their scholarship, get some kind of cost of living adjustment? Because by the same token, a college athlete really doesn't have an ability to work, yet they have a full-time job, and they have to go to class, but any other college student can do that. So, go ahead.
Finish up. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, my point is, and I agree with you, it's beyond broken. I mean, I think I'm using terms like it's infect. It's at a point where it's critical because they have to, meaning I think that, you know, these commissioners of college athletics have to realize this is not going to go away by putting the death penalty on. I'm telling you, you put the death penalty on Miami, and all that happens is 2 weeks later, another reporter will find another source to break another story on another major program. It will not end because these college athletes will still get tattoos from tattoo parlors because no one is thinking about, hey, wait a minute, you know, I guess because the rule book, which is very confusing, says you can't do this on Section A, Roman numeral number 2.
Right. And let me read a little bit more from the Gospel of Luke and the Luther Campbell. And Luther went on to say this, and kind of to your point, unlike kids who receive full academic scholarship, student-athletes must surrender their right to work. They are not allowed to hold a job. So if you're an 18-year-old wide receiver with a baby, how can you help feed and care for your child? How can society expect a young father to play football for 4 years without any financial benefit to his family? Even Olympians are allowed endorsement deals, and Olympians are considered amateur athletes. Well, what do you say to that?
Well, I mean, but that's a case in point. If nothing else, allow some of it. Ultimately, I think that, you know, we've heard it now, I think, for the last couple of weeks in terms of some of what's out there, in terms of what you'll see and what will happen. To me, I think it would be very unique if college athletics does the first step, which is recognize that the problem needs to be dealt with, and does that in a platform such as the Miami situation. But the problem they're faced with is if they do that for Miami, then you have, you know, Ohio State, who basically pushed out, you know, Jim Tressel, and then there is USC. So they're really caught in a zero-sum game here, which is, well, how can they, you know, say at this point we're not gonna punish one when we've punished so many before them? So ultimately, you know, with respect to Miami, you clearly see they're gonna get some harsh penalties. But I think they need to do this then in dual purpose, meaning saying because of Miami, because of the rash of recent, you know, problems, we're gonna correct this by, you know, potentially giving these college athletes some, in the form of a stipend, based off of where, you know, their college is. And I heard, you know, one of these governors of one of the college committees say that, you know, $4,000, for example, if you go to UCLA, in comparison to middle, you know, Tennessee State, is not the same $4,000. So I do think that, you know, and that's what makes this difficult for college athletics, because you are looking at rural versus urban, sometimes athletics and situations. And the fact is that some athletes, vis-a-vis Terrell Pryor, I mean way more to college athletics and their institution than the captain of the badminton team.
Very, very true. Let me read a little bit more from Luther Campbell. And more than a century of treating student-athletes like indentured servants, excuse me, is finally catching up to the NCAA. How can anyone expect college players to be satisfied with just getting a scholarship and free room and board at a major university that rakes in tens of millions of dollars annually from conference television deals, bowl games, and NCAA basketball tournament? It's downright ludicrous. And those are the words of Luther Campbell. And like I said, it's tough. It's a tough situation. And in some respect, yes, an education is valuable. It's very valuable. And like Willie said, not everybody is going to make it to the NFL. But could you imagine, in terms of coursework, if you – I've been to college myself, and obviously. I can imagine having to play football and focus on my studies. And I'm not sure if I would be able to do it. I'm not sure if I would have been able to do that. I really don't know if I could have done that. I mean, you're talking about focusing on your studies, a full course load, say 15 credits, and also playing football at a high level at a national university, a big-time university, and doing all those practice hours and all the things that you have to do. I'm not sure if I could do it. What do you think, Jeremy?
Well, no, I mean, but you hear, but I think you, the proof, Paul, is really in the pudding, where you see how many of these college athletes are really able to graduate, you know, and stay in college. The problem is they know and they're taught they're really not there for an education. They're there, they have a scholarship, and they have to make the school money. They have to pay. You know, when you go in an academic scholarship, your goal is to get good grades. If you're on an athletic scholarship, your goal is to win games for this institution. You are, and I mean, and we just heard, you are an indentured servant. You're an employee. You are a paid employee of an institution, and the payment for that is your athletic prowess. They claim college athletes or college athletics and colleges say, oh, well, they're getting a free education, but they're at a competitive disadvantage. And the bigger the college, the greater the disadvantage. It's impossible to believe a guy like Terrell Pryor, for example, will have the same ability to prepare for the same final that you and I would have had, Paul, because we weren't flying cross country to play, USC, and he's the starting quarterback of a major college football team. So when he's got tests and finals, he's not going to be able to spend a week doing a paper.
Exactly, because he has to study a playbook, study a game plan, and again, this is a big time player in a big time college university. So that's a tough situation. The second hour of Go For It starts now. In this 2 o'clock hour, we're expected to be joined by Atlanta Falcons tight end Reggie Kelly. And Reggie just signed with the Falcons this week, played for the Cincinnati Bengals for the last 7 years. So Reggie will be joining us in a few minutes. And also, comedian Sean Broyles, who will be joining us at 2:35. And Sean has an interesting book out there right now, comedian. And he's a funny guy. And he has an interesting book out there. It's titled Just Give Up, Why Nothing in Life is Worth Trying at All, Ever. Sean Broyles is the author, and Sean Broyles will be joining us at 2:35 and in this 2 o'clock hour. So looking forward to that, Reggie Kelly, in the next couple minutes, and Sean Broyles at 2:35. So we got a nice little hour set up for you, and make sure you stick around and make sure you listen. Go for it, blogtalkradio.com/PGannon. Make sure you follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGam. Make sure you follow us. Give us a follow. Give us a message. You might make a new friend. And Reggie Kelly signed with the Falcons this week, and Reggie Kelly plays with a Falcon team that number one team in the NFC last season, had home field advantage, and the Packers came in there and just throttled them. And in the offseason, they give up a lot to get Julio Jones from Alabama, an explosive wide receiver, someone who could complement Roddy White, complement Tony Gonzalez, and complement the great running game they had with Michael Turner. And so the Atlanta Falcons, they're a team that definitely believes that they can be there and that they will be there. And, you look at this ball club, again, they have a top-notch quarterback in Matt Ryan. He's a very good quarterback, And, again, their problem, I thought, defensively, their secondary was a little shaky last season. And I just thought right now you look at this Falcon ball club, they definitely could make a run this season and a big run because, again, they have a good quarterback and hopefully they improved on the defensive side of football because I think that's where they had some issues. They did bring in Ray Edwards from the Minnesota Vikings, and hopefully if you're a Falcon fan, he can complement John Abraham and what he brings off the end. And they have a good corner, left corner, and Brent Grimes. So they have some talent there. They have some talent there. And if you're a Falcons fan, hopefully you guys take that next step. And I think the next step has to be the Super Bowl, because you did everything else. You did everything else, and you were a very good team last season. You were a very good team last season, a very good team. And again, and you did what you needed to do. You had home field advantage throughout the whole playoff. You had it. So everything that you wanted, you essentially had it. If you're an Atlanta Falcons fan, you had that last season. If you're a Falcons fan, the question is, do they take that next step? And that next step, to me, again, has to be the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl has to be the next step if you're an Atlanta Falcons fan, no doubt about it. It has to be the Super Bowl. Has to be the Super Bowl. And everybody's giving a lot of attention to the Eagles, rightfully so, for their signings. And we're forgetting about the Falcons. We're forgetting about the Green Bay Packers, the Super Bowl champions. So a lot of people are forgetting about a lot of different things. And so we'll see what happens with the Falcons here in 2010. We'll see what happens, but I think it's Super Bowl or bust in Atlanta.
Well, I mean, it's been Super Bowl there, I think, you know, upon the emergence of Matt Ryan. And certainly, you know, they have a good team. Ultimately, and you know this, I think, Paul, especially in this year with the coming off of the lockout, and every year in the NFL, I think every team's goal has to be the Super Bowl. Otherwise, you will fade into mediocrity. Their ability to I think continue to push upward. I guess the signings, especially a guy like Reggie Kelly, and you know this team is got some veteran pieces, but certainly you know their defense could and can or needs to be a little bit more improved, and I think they need to be a little bit in terms of more consistent in terms of the flash and the brilliance of their offense. Sometimes it's a little slow.
And let's bring in now Reggie Kelly, the newest member of the Atlanta Falcons. Reggie, how are you, sir?
Yo, what's up, man? I'm doing good. Appreciate you having me on.
And I appreciate you coming on, Reggie. And Reggie, this past week, again, you signed with the Atlanta Falcons. Let's set the record straight here, Reggie. You were never retired, correct?
Correct. I was never retired. I don't quite understand how that rumor got out, but when it got out, it caught like wildfire. Had the opportunity to visit the Steelers, and once I left their camp, I guess people thought because I didn't sign initially that I just went on ahead and retired, so I tried to stop that rumor, tried to nick it at the butt, and tried to let people know, let other teams know that I was still available, that I was still on the market.
Was there any thought of retirement?
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. You know, I ruptured my...
Hello? We lost Reggie there, hopefully.
It's either that Paul, or he wanted to make a statement. It could have just been a simple no.
We lost Reggie Kelly. Hopefully he can call back. I guess he was in a bad cell area. But we'll wait for Reggie to call on back and get him back on. And Reggie is the smooth operator, if you will. Barry, very Barry White-like in his voice. And, and he came on and he blessed us.
It's interesting, though, Paul.
Go ahead.
We'll get him. I'm sure he'll call back once he gets into a better cell. But I think it was interesting to hear that. Again, it gets back to, and we spoke about this. So a player doesn't, you know, necessarily go to the team or the organization in which he was meant to. He spoke about with, and it was a good point where he said about, you know, Brian Walters and not being signed, but he was active in certain involvements. And the league is it's a very fickle league. There seems always to be some undercurrent out there to...
Jeremy, let me interrupt you now. Let's bring Reggie Kelly back in. Reggie.
What's up, guys? I apologize for that. I killed my phone. I guess it must have went dead on me.
No problem, sir. No problem, sir. I think we were at, was there any thought of retirement?
No, again, you know, that was no thought of retirement. I'm not quite sure how that rumor got out, but like I said, caught on like Wi-Fi, but I wanted to get on the media circuit, let everybody know that I'm not retired. I'm excited about playing again. Like I said, I ruptured my Achilles in 2009, so a lot of people didn't think I'd be able to come back from that. I rehabbed extremely hard, came back the entire 2010 season, and I think I won all 32 teams to see that I could be durable and a valuable asset to any team. And I'm just thankful that I had a few organizations willing to get my services, but I think signing with the Atlanta Falcons was the best possible choice I could have done.
And Reggie, you talked about the Achilles injuries. We're seeing a lot of Achilles injuries right now. Are you surprised by the amount of injuries so far?
Well, to be honest with you, it's something that's unpredictable. You really can't predict an Achilles tendon tear. Sometimes they are, sometimes on some guys they are tight and then they pull them. But in other situations, guys are just normal, feeling just fine like I was feeling, and then it just rupture out of the blue. I can remember that I ruptured mine. I didn't do anything strenuous or anything explosive. I just simply ran a check down route out of the backfield. And the next thing I know, it felt like my shoe had came off. And lo and behold, wow, it was just my Achilles had ruptured. So it's something that you just can't avoid. I know for a lot of guys with the technology that we have right now, it's really not that big of a deal now because the surgeons can get in and properly repair it. You have the right rehab process now, and that's why you see a lot of guys coming back from this type of injury.
Reggie, that's interesting. So after the injury, when you say that there it was just like a freak accident, does the trainer, does the surgeon, does the doctors, can they help you like understand if it was a normal, if you're just following normal sequence, was there something, or did they tell you it just was your one in a million and statistics land where they land?
Yeah, I asked the surgeon before he actually operated on me. I was like, is there anything I could have done? You know, is there anything I could have done to prevent such an injury? And he just said no, quite bluntly. No, you can't prevent them. They just happen. You can't predict when it's going to happen. It's just something that happens. And now the rehab process is a long, strenuous process, and it's not tough. But the reason it's so long is because the Achilles tendon, it's the strongest tendon in the body, so it takes time to properly heal. And so in the past years, you know, it's been tough for guys to come back from such an injury. But I think throughout technology, as we have today, it makes it quite possible. But yes, guys who injure, you just never know when it's going to occur. And sadly, we have seen a lot of Achilles tendon tears during training camp this year.
And did you think you were done? Did that go through your mind at all when you ruptured your Achilles?
It did. I'll be honest with you. I felt like I had a couple of strikes against me. You know, I was entering to my 11th season as an NFL vet, so I was like an old goat, I guess you can say, by NFL standards. So that was the first strike against me, and I understand it's a young man's game. And the second strike, when I actually tore my Achilles, you know, I think a lot of people thought, well, he's getting old, number one, and then he tore his Achilles. More than likely, he's not going to be able to come back. And so, rightfully so, some of those thoughts came to my mind. I was like, man, am I going to be able to play again? Am I going to be able to play again with the Cincinnati Bengals? Man, what am I going to do? Because I didn't want my career to end like that. I would much rather, like most players, you want to end your career on your own terms. And so I didn't want to go out my last year, you know, with an injury. So I decided to fight extremely hard to come back. I said I was going to put all my heart and all my effort into this rehab process and let the chips fall where they may. Thank goodness I did so.
We're talking to Reggie Kelly, tight end for the Atlanta Falcons. And Reggie, you talked about it. You worked out with the Steelers. You didn't sign there, and you also worked out with the Falcons, and ultimately you signed with the Falcons. But was it important for you to be with a contender? Because those two teams that you tried out for were contending teams.
Yeah, it was. You know, I'm going into my 13th season, so I know the window is narrowing. I know I have a small window now, considering, you know, I'm getting up in age. So I wanted to play for a team that I know had a chance to be a really great team. I know with the Pittsburgh Steelers, obviously that organization speaks for itself. They have tons and tons of success, have an energetic
an exciting young coach in Coach Tomlin. He's a great guy, and I see why they're winning up there. But also with the Atlanta Falcons, man, you have an electric team, electrifying team, a team that can score well, a defense that can cause turnovers, and special teams play that's second to none. And so when you add all those key ingredients, I thought it just made sense for me to sign with the Falcons. Plus, another thing that really, I guess, sealed the deal was that, you know, I actually live in Atlanta anyway.
Wow.
During the off season. My kids are in school here. And so it was pretty much a no-brainer at that point. It was good that I didn't have to relocate my family to another city.
So in clearing up the air, you actually may have just kind of given us a window there. I mean, the fact that maybe Atlanta was in the mix, but to get you to sign with an organization like Pittsburgh versus Atlanta, for you, the idea was to get to a contender and Atlanta and or Pittsburgh, but if your home base is Atlanta, that's ultimately where you want to be.
Yeah, and I think that was part of the decision process as well. You know, at this time in my career, you know, my kids, you know, I have young kids, 7 and 5, and so you get them in the school system, you don't want to uproot them, you don't want to change their normal everyday life. Plus, I must admit, we love it down south. We love it in Atlanta. Obviously, I started my career here, so ever since then, we've often been back, and we decided to purchase a home here and just make this our home, even when football is over with. And so it was exciting when they called and said that they wanted to sign me. My wife was thrilled about it. My family, which is back home in Mississippi, which would be a short drive for them to come to the games, they were excited, and it just made perfect sense. I thought this would be the perfect ideal place for me to come and play.
And, Reggie, you said it. You are back where you started in Atlanta. And last year, this Falcon Ball Club, the best record in the NFC. In my mind, when it comes to the Atlanta Falcons now, the next step to me is the Super Bowl. It has to be Super Bowl or bust. Do you kind of feel that vibe around this ball club?
Well, I just think the way that we're looking at it, I'm sure the entire NFL and 32 teams are looking at it from the same perspective, is that, you know, every team wants to go to the Super Bowl. That's always been a battle cry. It's always been a motto at the beginning of any off-season training camp, and so forth and so forth. But at the same time, you know, we're still taking it one day at a time. There's so much that we have to get cleaned up, so many things that we have to work on, the chemistry, the timing, conditioning, and make sure we got everything in order before we can even go too far ahead and think about Super Bowl. But sure, it's in the back of my mind. Ever since I've been playing 13 years, I've always had that in the back of my mind. I'm sure the coaches and my teammates do as well. But at the same time, you have to be a professional. You have to make sure that you take care of the little things first. And once you take care of the little things, then the big things will eventually come.
So Reggie, I want to – playing in Cincinnati and seeing especially, I guess, I hate to call it a meltdown – this off season, but with you know the supposed retirement of Carson Palmer and trading you know Chad Ochocinco, talk to everyone about what it was like and what it's like playing inside of that organization.
I'll be honest with you, man, it was great. It was absolutely fantastic, and I know a lot of people really don't understand that, but you know a lot of people have certain vibes, I guess you can say, about Chad. They have you know a misconception of really what type of guy he is. He's a fun-loving guy. Guy works extremely hard. We've seen his workout regimen. A lot of you guys have too, you know, especially during the off-season. So he works extremely hard, and the young guys follow behind him because the proof is in the pudding. His hard work does pay off. And sure, he does some of the some of the antics on the field. Yeah. Sometimes it can go a little bit too far, but I would trade that off for the big-time play that he brings to the game of football. And so you can't deny what type of player he is. You can't deny what type of person he is. And so I've enjoyed playing with him. And to be quite frankly, I was surprised that they traded him. I really was surprised. But, you know, I wish him well in New England. I know he wants to have a chance to win a ring as well. I know he's going to work extremely hard, and I'm sure he feels revitalized right about now.
For that
great organization. Now, with the situation with Carson, I consider him a dear friend of mine. You know, last year was a tough year. It was a really tough year. He played his butt off. A lot of times what people don't understand is that Carson played through a lot of injuries where the physicians and the doctors would tell him, you shouldn't go out and play. But because he's that type of teammate, because he's that type of guy, he would always lay it on the line for his teammates. And that's why in the locker room we have so much respect for him. I hate to see his career end like this, especially a guy with that much talent and that much potential. Carson could easily play another 6 or so years or more and still be one of the elite quarterbacks in the league. I'm kind of speechless to say, you know, why it all went down the way it did, but I hate to see a great athlete like that retire so early.
Well, two questions. And we're speaking with Reggie Kelly. Used to be a Cincinnati Bengal, so we're going to call him the resident expert. Now he's an Atlanta Falcon. So do you think that Ojo Cinco was traded because of the uncertainty with Palmer and getting some value?
No, you know, I just think that it was a new day for the Cincinnati Bengals. I think that it's a new era. I think what they're trying to do right now is go young, get a lot of young talent, and maybe, I guess you can say, maybe start brand new. As you can see, they have a new quarterback, some new receivers, young, explosive tight ends, and so forth and so forth. Even on the defense, they got some nice young talent as well. So I think it's kind of like a rebuilding process for them. I still think they're going to fight extremely hard this year. I know Coach Lewis is always going to get the guys prepared to play. That's a no-brainer. He's another great coach as well. And I wish him nothing but the best. But I just think it's kind of like a rebuilding team. They want to start fresh. And so in order for them to do that, they have to give the young guys the reins and let them know that they have their trust.
And was there any thought on your part about going back to Cincinnati? I know you said you wanted to play with contenders, but you were in Cincinnati for 7 seasons. Was there any thought of possibly going back to Cincinnati or wanting to go back to Cincinnati?
Yeah, you know, doing free agency also, that they wanted to sign me also. And so, you know, I talked it over with them because I'll be honest with you, for the longest I wanted to retire as a Cincinnati Bengal. So we did talk. We had some long, extensive talks. I had some nice talks with Coach Lewis, also the front office of the Bengals, and my tight ends coach, Jonathan Hayes, who played 12 years in the NFL. I built a great relationship with those guys. I came in with them their first year with the Bengals, so they know me inside and out, and I knew them. And so I thought it would be a great fit to come back and play for them as well. But as time progressed, I think both sides realized that it would be best if we both go our separate ways. You know, I think, again, they have a great tight end. Matter of fact, they have three really good tight ends, Jermaine Gresham, Bo Scaife, and Chase Kaufman. So they're loaded at the tight end position. I didn't have a problem coming back playing for the team. But at the same time, you know, I knew the direction that they were going. And I had no problem with it. It's no hard feelings. Nothing but love for that team and nothing but love for that organization because they treated me extremely well my time there.
And, Reggie, you're a guy. You're very busy outside of football, heavily involved in the community. Tell us about some of the things you're doing in the community.
Well, you know, I try to give back as much as I can, man. Whether if it's to the elderly, we do some things for them, giving out hams and turkeys during Thanksgiving and the Christmas season. Or others giving back to the kids, you know, a football camp or so forth and so forth. I just, you know, I especially get excited about giving to the kids because I want them to realize not to allow anybody to put a box around them, not to allow people to tell them what they can and what they can't do. And I want to be some form of inspiration to them to see that I'm a small-town country boy from Aberdeen, Mississippi, but yet God blessed me. He gave me the desires of my heart and allowed me to do what I've always wanted to do, and that's live out a childhood dream. And so if it can happen to me, then surely it can happen to them. So, you know, that's one of the reasons I believe God gave me this platform. I want to use it. I want to be a positive influence to the kids and hopefully encourage them to shoot for their dreams also.
And where can we find information about some of the things you're doing in the community?
Well, you guys can always check out my website at ReggieKelly82.com and see what I have going on. You can also follow me on Twitter at ReggieKelly82. And make sure that you holler at your boy.
And Reggie, you're on this show. We like to play a game called Who's Better. I'll give you two topics. You tell me which one's better. You ready to play, sir?
all right, let's go. Let's shoot.
Better sandwich, the Big Mac or the Whopper?
Oh, the Big Mac, hands down. I used to work at McDonald's. I used to love the 2 for $2 back in the day.
Oh, another one, Paul. Another McDonald's. Well, Paul and I are McDonald's veterans ourselves. So it's you and many others.
Where did y'all work? Were y'all cooks or were y'all up front?
We did
all
the
above.
We cooked it. We cleaned it. You name it, we did it.
No doubt. Were y'all veterans then, at it then, huh?
Definitely, definitely. Too many years, actually, Reggie. Better city, Reggie, Aberdeen, Mississippi, or Philadelphia, Mississippi?
Man, no question. A-Town, baby. Aberdeen, what is that?
And the last question, smoother voice, Barry White or Reggie Kelly?
Practice what you... I'll have to go with my man, Barry White. He's plenty of hearts in his days. So I had to go with Barry White. He's the man.
Very
much respect.
Again, everybody, make sure you check him out on Twitter, ReggieKelly82, and also check out his website, ReggieKelly82.com. Reggie Kelly, a pleasure, sir. Let's do it again, and good luck in the 2011 season.
No doubt. I appreciate it. Y'all make sure you holler at your boy. Continue to do your thing, all right?
Take care.
All right. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Peace.
Reggie Kelly, tight end, the Atlanta Falcons, and another McDonald's veteran. Another guy who knows what it takes to put together a Big Mac. He knows what it takes to put together a quarter pounder with cheese. He knows. And you know, I'm going to go on a little rant here for a second about McDonald's. I mean, when I first started working at McDonald's, we had to sear the meat. And then after searing the meat, we had to flip the meat. And then we had to make sure that the meat wasn't rare and it was fully cooked. We had to do all those different things at McDonald's. Nowadays, all you have to do is put the meat down, put down a little compressor, in a few minutes, it's all done. I mean, I got a lot of battle scars, a lot of burns from what I did during my time at McDonald's. I got a lot of scars, a lot of battle scars. If maybe I can post some pictures on Twitter. No, I don't think so. But I got a lot of battle scars from my days at McDonald's, a lot of battle scars. How about yourself?
Yeah, Paul. You know, it's funny. You see, like you were saying, people don't remember what it used to be like back in the day, and that's why it was interesting to hear Reggie Kelly give that shout out, acknowledge it to the Big Mac, but to the Golden Arches, my friend.
Definitely, and it was kind of interesting, kind of piggybacking off this interview with Reggie Kelly. It's kind of interesting how he talked about the Cincinnati organization and how much he loved it. And, you know, you hear a lot of stories about the Cincinnati organization, about Carson Palmer obviously saying he'd rather retire than to play in Cincinnati. And you know, he didn't rip the organization. Actually, he wanted to return and ultimately retire as an Atlanta Falcon. I mean, not Atlanta Falcon, a Cincinnati Bengal. There was thoughts that he maybe wanted to retire there.
It was very telling. You know, Paul, it was certainly interesting. Every year, I think for certainly the last 5 years, that team has been packed with talent, and it's just been one unfortunate circumstance or another, and it really is a shame because, I mean, I think for all intents and purposes, you know, with the owner, Mike Brown, I think he's a well-intended owner, he means well. Carson Palmer has been a model citizen in the NFL, certainly been a very productive quarterback, and I totally agree with Reggie Kelly. Stepping away from the game, this was not a quarterback on downswing of his game. They had even...
You're talking about Carson Palmer?
Yeah, I mean, Paul, unless you're going to really disagree, you think Palmer was on the downswing of his game?
I mean... Carson Palmer did not have a good season last year. He did not. And Reggie Kelly said there were some injuries involved. And some say Carson Palmer may be on the downswing. And some would argue that he's never been the same after that ACL injury against the Pittsburgh Steelers in that playoff game. Some have said he's never been the same.
Well, but Paul, and that was thank you for introducing that. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, and you just heard Reggie Kelly say, I mean, these injuries, when he has that injury at a time when, as Reggie Kelly said, the science now, every year it multiplies by 100. And so, you know, coming back from these injuries, it can be a challenge. Also, you have to keep in mind, Paul, the Bengals, the one thing they've never really – yes, they had a good runner. Their offensive line has never really, in my opinion, been where it needed to be to put that team where they should be, which is in the playoffs. And you look at a guy like Palmer, and Reggie Kelly says it, takes a lot of hits and gets even, you know, maybe somewhat healthy in the knee, but has a lot of injuries that – really aren't out there in the media for people to know about and potentially could be, you know, somewhat unfairly judged.
I mean, you look at Carson Palmer's numbers last year, 26 touchdowns, but 26 big interceptions. I mean, I'm sorry, 26 touchdowns, but 20 interceptions for Carson Palmer last season. He struggled. He definitely struggled. And you know, there was a lot of talk of Super Bowl with that Cincinnati Bengals team, bringing the T.O., to add to Chad Ochocinco and to go with what you already have, Cedric Benson in the mix and some decent pieces on the defensive side of football. A lot of people thought that this team could be a contender. And it just went wrong all year long. The defense was not that great, and Carson Palmer was not that great. T.O. was actually okay last year. I mean, you look at T.O.'s numbers, and he's rehabbing from an ACL injury, but 72 catches, 983 yards, and 9 touchdowns. T.O. wasn't that bad last year. His numbers were not that bad. Ochocinco's numbers weren't awful either. I mean, 67 catches, 831 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Not awful numbers there for Chad Ochocinco. For whatever reason, it just did not go well in Cincinnati. It did not go well in Cincinnati. But you look at it now, and you look at it. They're blowing that whole situation up, and obviously, T.O.'s probably not coming back. Chad Ochocinco obviously was traded. Carson Palmer probably won't be back. And so they have blown that situation up and pretty much handed the keys to the franchise to the young rookie, Andy Dalton, and new wide receiver, E.G. Green. And you also have Jordan Shipley already there, Jermaine Gresham, a tight end who has some promise. So they basically have blown that situation up. And it looks like Dehani Jones, a linebacker, last year, who was their leading tackle for the Bengals last season, probably won't be back as well. So they're moving in a whole different direction in Cincinnati, a whole different direction in Cincinnati, and it's changed a lot. It's definitely changed a lot. It's a new era in Cincinnati, and, I mean, you look at the wide receivers, you got, E.G. Green, it's actually A.J. Green and Jerome Simpson, two of their wide receivers, and that's a far cry from T.O. and Ocho. Definitely a far cry from that. And then you look at it, and Andy Dalton changes the situation as well. He's a new quarterback. And there's a lot of changes here in Cincinnati, and it's a new team. It's a new day in Cincinnati, and they're going to struggle this year, obviously, because of all the different changes and all the different moves. They are going to struggle. But I think it might have been the best decision for the ball club to kind of blow this thing up and kind of get – you know, trying to clean house a little bit and you know, see what they can do with Dalton, start the new era, the Andy Dalton era, and the rest of the guys.
We'll
see.
They're
going to struggle.
And they had no choice. I mean, it's been so many years of the same. And they're stuck in the same mold. I mean, when you look at ultimately, I told you, that team where they failed during the last 5 years was right on the offensive line. They never could get 1 year of very consistent play from, you know, that offensive line, you know, or the group of them to keep the entire unit, meaning the running game and the passing game throughout the season. Because you would see at some point some games, especially when they bring in Cedric Benson over the last 2 or 3 years, They would run the ball well in some games, and other games they couldn't run the ball at all, and they would pass the ball, but then they can't pass the ball, and it's a shame, and I mean, you hope Andy Dalton can be, if anything, be a Carson Palmer, because I feel like, for whatever it's worth, I mean, they're nuts to have him just sit there in retirement.
I think they're equally as nuts to do that. I mean,
you
I think it's not.
You might as well pay the guy and get something.
You might as well get some value for the guy. I mean, it doesn't make sense to just let him sit there and essentially rot in retirement and get nothing for him. I mean, that's just a bad move on my part, but I guess principle is principle.
No, I mean, and again, I think the one issue I think the NFL rarely deals with is this, where players will hold out because they want a new contract. Rarely will players say, I want to leave an organization or I will retire. And I think Carson Palmer, because he's doing no talking, but people around him are saying, hey, the guy has invested well. Hey, I mean, the guy, you know, doesn't monetarily need to play anymore. You know, keep in mind, he did get some guaranteed money that is more than enough for him to live beyond his comfort range for the rest of his life. And the fact that, you know, he doesn't want to play for this organization and he won't be the last.
And let's bring in now comedian, author, funny man, Sean Broyles. Sean, how are you, sir?
I'm all right, man. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing great, Sean. I'm doing very well. And Sean, let's start here. I've been to your website, SeanBroyles.com, and each and every day you have a Broyles-ism. Can I get a Broyles-ism for Saturday, August 20th, 2011?
A Broyles-ism for Saturday, too. You know what? How about this? When you make a choice of what to eat at midnight, and you have a choice between eating a bowl of cereal and frying up macaroni and cheese and throwing it on a slice of bread with another slice of cheese, you might want to go with a bowl of cereal because the next day is going to hurt.
I think the macaroni and cheese would taste better.
Oh, it tasted fine, but let's just say I've had a little bit of trouble today, folks.
that's
my Broyles-ism.
That's very unfortunate, Sean. That's very unfortunate, and hopefully you are washing your hands after you're done.
I have to, man. I have to. Yeah.
And Sean, you were an anchor in Kansas City. You won numerous honors there, but apparently, I didn't know this was possible, but you were fired for being too funny. How does that happen?
You know what? Every time I hear that, I still can't believe it. I don't know. I don't know how it happened. You know, I can remember the day, man, that I walked, you know, they called me into the office, and I knew something was up because it was the day that they had to decide whether to renew my contract or not, and then they called me in the office. And that's what they told me. They said, you know, we got to let you go because you're too funny. You don't fit with our brand and what we do. And I'm like, you know what? I told him, I said, you know, I apologize for making your mama jokes during murder scenes, but you know what? We can get past that. We can get past that. No, I never made a your mama joke. But you know, I mean, what can you do? You try and liven up the news a little bit. You know, you laugh when it's appropriate, and I guess they just weren't feeling me. And that was the end of that.
And Shauna, I saw one of your reports, and it was something to the effect of power lines leaning on the side like the Leaning Tower of Pizza. Please explain.
You know what? I don't know how that blew up so much. Look, there were power lines. I thought I was being clever because they looked like they were leaning over like the Leaning Tower of Pizza, but I hadn't eaten all day, and apparently I had pizza on the brain. The next thing you know, I say the Leaning Tower of Pizza, and now it blows up on YouTube where this stupid reporter is calling it the Leaning Tower of Pizza. I know it's pizza. I've been there. It's in Italy. It's pizza. P-I-S-A, I know. But I hadn't eaten all day, and it became pizza.
But Sean, you bring up you know, I think you're trying to bring up interesting correlations. Does this country at some point really, they need to kind of lighten up, especially considering half of us, you know, are on the government dime or on unemployment, sitting around, and all you're doing is just trying to bring some brevity to a day. I mean, are we too serious for nothing?
You know, I absolutely believe that. I really do. I think it's a bunch of fear mongering, and I think a lot of people, you know, the media believes that we have to scare people in order to get ratings. And I really don't think that's the case. I mean, back when I was growing up, you had actually TV personalities, you know, and people were watching, you know, you tune into the news. It was like appointment television. And you tune in because you enjoyed the personality delivering the news of the day. And that's what I tried to do. And I think you hit it right on the head. I think, you know, no one has a sense of humor. And I think things have to change, especially in times like these when people don't have jobs and people, you know, losing their jobs, on unemployment. People need to be able to laugh. And that's why I wrote that book. I mean, it's just, you know, let's laugh at our situation instead of dwelling in it, you know.
And Sean, you know that very well, living on, you were unemployed for a period of time. You stocked shelves at a local Toys R Us. You cashed out your 401k. I mean, you got a lot of Malcolm X in you, Sean, a lot of any means necessary. I mean, how tough was that for you?
Man, it was tough, man. That was very good, by the way. Man, it was tough. It was really tough. You know, I don't know if anyone out there has ever been on unemployment. I mean, I'm sure you have, and people have been on unemployment. But let me tell you, man, unemployment sucks. Unemployment's terrible. I mean, you know, it's, you know, that you get checks some weeks, sometimes they forget to send them. You know, I wish I was on welfare. That's where I was wanting to be.
Yeah.
I was like, let me get on welfare. My wife's like, I wouldn't be caught dead using food stamps. I'm like, let them give me some food stamps, man. I'd be at the grocery store, like, making it rain at the strip club.
Sean, you get a credit card now. There's no stamps. It used to be you could collect cards with a stamp. You get a credit card now. I mean, you want to talk about, and Paul tries to make things, you know, funny in his own right. You want to talk about being funny, saying where you want to be is being on welfare. To me, that was like almost being in a church service right there. Because I saw an amen going on.
Hey, you know, I don't even know where to go from that.
We're talking to comedian.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, he's right, though. He's right. He's absolutely right. I mean, the thing is, you don't even get the food stamps anymore. I mean, they make it so difficult now. You get this credit card, and I had that credit card. It's just they make it so difficult for you to get anything anymore from the government. And there are people out there, like myself at the time, who really needed it. And that's where that book was written, man, because I just had nowhere else to go.
And, Sean, when you used the access card, did you kind of try to hide it a little bit, make it seem like it was a debit card or a credit card?
Oh, bro, you don't even know, man. I tried to slide that thing in there so quick. I mean, I was I joke, but I was like, you know, I didn't want to use the EBT, you know. I was just like, I just want to get in and get out. So I hardly went to the store, man. You know what I did? I bought like, you know, 100 things of toilet paper. I bought like all sorts of things. So I only had to make one run to the store. And that was it. You only have to go through that embarrassment once.
We're talking to comedian Sean Broyles, and Sean has a great book out. It's titled Just Give Up, Why Nothing in Life is Worth Trying at All, Ever. And that's Sean Broyles' book. And make sure you pick it up. And make sure this is a funny guy here, very funny guy. And Sean, in the book, you give advice on dating. And I know there's a lot of guys out here who need some dating advice. What would a person need to do if they're looking to catch the attention of the opposite sex?
First of all, here's what you don't do. You don't call the 1-900 numbers. That's a gift, okay? If you think the girl that's on that TV screen is the girl you're going to be talking to, believe me, it's not, because I could be that girl. I could talk high like this. Okay? So don't do it. If you want to catch the attention of an opposite sex, here's what you do. You just go to work. Because the only thing you're going to do, like I did, I met my wife at work. That's the way you do it. You go to work, you get a job, and you meet a sorry sap like yourself who's already given up and who's at the job, who ain't going anywhere in their life, and then you just have a cup of tea and you call it good.
And was your wife okay with you being fired for being funny?
Yeah, she was fine with it. She enjoyed it. She thought, hey, it's Christmas time. Why, it's the best time for you to get fired. Why don't you do it? Yeah, no, no, man, it was, you know, it was just, I mean, it was right before Christmas. So Christmas was was just terrible. And I remember, here's what I did. I took, like, a week before, I remember we had gone out to a nice dinner at Red Lobster, right? So when I got let go, I told my wife, I go, you have to meet me now because I got some news that you won't like. You know where I met her? At McDonald's. I said, well, I want you to get used to what our lives are going to be. Remember last week's Red Lobsters? Remember those Cheddar Bay biscuits? Nuh-uh, no more. We got some fries for you if you want.
Or McDonald's biscuits. They got some pretty good biscuits.
This wasn't breakfast, though. But you're right. I go for the bacon, egg, and cheese myself. But But no, I mean, she was, you know, what can you do? You know, you think your wife thinks you're doing a good job. She's laughing at you. She's saying, oh, I saw your thing the other day where you brought our daughter. I brought my daughter on set one time and had her introduce a story. And I got ripped for that, got absolutely destroyed by management for that. But everybody thought it was cute. But, I mean, when that happened, my wife was just as devastated as I was. And I know she didn't tell anybody that her husband was working at Toys R Us. I know if people ask what her husband was doing now, she probably said, oh, he's working at home. You know, he's doing big things, working investments, big things.
And Sean, I spent some time in newsrooms, as well as you have, and I have to say, man, I don't know if it's me, but there is a lot of weird people that work in television. What do you think?
It's, you know what, you know it. I mean, you absolutely, it's a community that, I mean, I've always thought would make a great, you know, like an office type show. In fact, I've written a pilot about a newsroom because the people are so crazy. I mean, and they're all drunks. Because they all hate themselves for having to cover these stories they cover. I mean, they none of them, like hardly any of them, have solid relationships. I mean, it is a death zone of human despair, and I mean, it is an agony. If you go, the stories in front of the camera aren't even as good as the ones you'll find in the newsroom. That's you hit it right on the head. They are some nutso people. That anchor I love. That anchor you love, that big time anchor you love to watch every night. Oh, that dude's a meth head. He's a meth head.
So you're saying Jim Gardner is? It's pretty.
He is meth. I don't even know him, but I'm guaranteeing you, he's hooked on something.
And Sean, in this book. The book that you have out right now, Sean, you give dieting advice as well. And I'm a guy right now, Sean. I'm gaining weight, and I want to bring sexy back. But I don't like to exercise or like to eat right. So what should I do? Should I just give up and don't do it, or should I try to lose weight?
You are exactly who I wrote this book for then. Because you're like me. You're like me. You want this Adonis figure, but then at midnight you're making fried macaroni and cheese sandwiches. It's not worth it, because you know as well as I do, man, is that you start these diets and you're all excited, and you go 2 days of eating lettuce and tomato and no burgers and no chicken, and that's the end of that. And so you know what? Unless you're very, very disciplined, I'm banking that 90% of the people that are going to read this book are not going to be disciplined and are going to enjoy the dieting advice I give, which is to just give up and not worry yourself and beat yourself up for failing another diet. I mean, that's what we do, man. All these things we do, dieting, fitness, dating, we fail in all of them all the time. And then we blame ourselves, and then we wonder what's wrong with us. You know what? There's nothing wrong with you. You're a regular human being. Everybody fails.
Right.
So why not accept that and laugh at it and just do what you have to do to get by and enjoy life?
We're talking to comedian Sean Broyles. Sean has a great new book out there. It's called Just Give Up, Why Nothing in Life is Worth Trying at All, Ever. And Sean, judging by this book, should I ever even get up in the morning?
I you know what? Yes, you should. You know what? It's a demotivational book, yes. But, you know, if you read the book and if you see what I'm saying, if you look deep into what I'm saying, you'll realize that you will have the greatest life in the history of mankind, because you will get up and you won't worry about anything. If you get a date, great. If you don't, great. But you won't be killing yourself if you don't. If you wake up and you have a bowl of nice, Kix for cereal, you'll be happy with yourself. If you don't, if you wake up and you make yourself a 6-egg omelet with bacon and sausage, it's okay. It's okay. All of it's fine. If you read the book, you see what I'm saying, man. I'm saying that, you know what, I have a look. Here's the deal. I got a 350 cholesterol count, okay?
Wow.
I'm a relatively young man. I'm in decent shape. But I still have a 350 cholesterol count. So nothing I do is working. So I'm giving up, man. Screw the cholesterol. If it's at 700 next year, that's fine.
And Sean, you touch on dieting, you touch on dating advice, but you also talk about your family in this book.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
You know, it's funny because when you're writing this thing, you know, you don't really realize how your family will end up reading it. And my mom was not too happy with the results. I guess I called her if you call your mom a drunk and a gambling addict, you'd think she could get a little bit of a laugh out of it, but apparently she took it seriously. And I grew up, she drank quite a bit, and she gambled. She taught me how to play poker at 6. I mean, to me, that sounds like a pretty cool mom. My mom's like, you've ruined my business. My employees are looking at me now. I'm a drunk. I'm like, but you are a drunk. You are. They should know, and you can party with your employees now. Wouldn't that be fun, Mom? Wouldn't it? She didn't get it.
I wonder why.
Obviously.
She didn't understand. I don't know. But, no, I mean, you know, when you write a book like this, because half the book is the things called me fail and how I failed in that particular chapter, and then the other thing is how you failed. So in the me fail chapters, you know, I bring a lot of stories, you know, it's basically all stories of how I failed in this particular thing. And that's exactly how my stand-up comedy tour is, too, the Just Give Up tour, is I'm basically like a Bill Cosby up there. I tell a lot of stories and a lot of, you know, self-deprecating stories of how things went wrong in my life. And so that, I think, was the most fun part of the book, was like going back and saying, oh, my God, I can't believe this happened to me in second grade. I'm writing it in the book. And, you know, and so that was a lot of fun in the whole process of writing the book.
Aside from your mom, who you credit here, who were your motivations? What was the motivation to put a book out like this?
You know, it was a lot harder than I thought it would be. You know, I thought, you know, that it was a great idea, you know, because everybody's doing these motivational books. And I thought, you know, a Just Give Up book, you know, in a tongue-in-cheek way of telling people, you know, just to pack it in. I thought that was a great idea. So, you know, I tried to do, you know, go through the traditional route of going to actual, you know, publishers and literary agents. Nothing. I didn't even get a response. And so I ended up having to self-publish it. And that process is just, it's just brutal. I mean, it costs money, and, you know, that's one of the reasons I worked at Toys R Us, was because I needed money to help publish this book. And I think, you know, there wasn't really any one motivator to write the book. It was just that as I after I got fired and everything started going wrong, I mean, my refrigerator broke, my heat broke, everything started dying, and I started jotting down all this stuff, and then the next thing you know, I, like, wrote, you know, kind of a journal. And then the next thing you know, I had, like, full chapters, and I decided, okay, well, this might turn out to be a decent book. And ended up pitching it to everybody. No one wanted it. So I just finished the book myself and published it.
So where do we go to see you do your stand-up tour?
Well, I just finished in Chicago, July 29th, and up next is I'm actually going to be at the Comedy Store here in L.A., but my next actual tour date for the Just Give Up tour is going to be in Lansing, Michigan, and then back here in L.A., and I'm trying to book a lot more out east, too, because I got friends out east, and I'm trying to make a run down the East Coast. But it'll all be – all the dates, the specific dates will be on my website, SeanBroyles.com, and you can always follow me on Facebook and on Twitter, and I'm always going to have updates as far as, you know, where I'm performing next and and whatnot, where you can come see me.
Now you told, now you and your book told a story about your mom, maybe without asking her. So I'm going to follow your advice and tell you without asking Paul, since he's out on the East Coast. When you get out here and you need an efficient place to stay, I'm going to offer up Paul's house for free.
Hey, hey, if I won't even wait for an answer. I'm taking it.
You acting
yeah.
just like Sean's mama.
I'm definitely taking that, man. It sounds like a family member to me, man.
And Sean, what should people expect to hear at a Sean Broyles show?
Well, you know what I'd say? I say on my flyers, I say it's the storytelling of Bill Cosby, the energy of Martin Lawrence, and the butt of the Statue of David. That's what I give. I give the sort of, I give the, you know, it's a cool little storytelling thing, but it's energetic, you know, and I use colorful language, yes, and I talk, you know, and I do have, you know, regular, like, comedian jokes, quote unquote. But the majority of it is, you know, is talking about my life and, like, funny stories that have happened. I think everybody has a comedian in them. I think everybody has stories that have happened. And I think, and, you know, when I thought about doing the stand-up tour, I thought, you know, I could go one way or another. I could just do my, because I used to do stand-up before the book, and I could just go out and do jokes and observations. But you know what? The way to be unique is to talk about yourself, and I think that's what's at least so far the two dates we've done have gone over really well, because it's material that you're guaranteed not to have ever heard, because it came directly from my life.
Right. And Sean, I was listening to your I went onto your website and I listened to your rap. I got a little rap for you, Sean, and hopefully you'll like it. Take
okay.
a listen. It's the Go For It Show on Blog Talk Radio. The show is so good, it should win the ESPY. We do it so well, Paul Gannon, Jeremy ESPY. But make sure you listen to the show and my man, Sean Broyles. He's a cat who is funny and loyal. And go to his website, SeanBroyles.com, and get his book and support his latest endeavor, Just Give Up, Why Nothing in Life is Worth Trying at All, Ever.
All right. See, now that I like that, man. That had a little bit of a poetry feel to it. It was like, you know, I like that. That was okay. That was okay. We'll work together on one when I get out there, though.
There you go. Get the room ready, Paul.
Yeah, we'll work together. You know, we'll work together on one. I'll put one, like, we can have, like, a, you know, a rap just for a specific segment for your show. Just a quick rap would be.
Right.
Yeah,
well, we'll do
yeah.
that. We'll do that, definitely.
All right,
try.
Man.
And again, bye. We can go to SeanBroyles.com to buy the book.
Yes, you can. It's you know, you can go to, it's on Amazon. It's on all those places. You can get one of those what's a book called Kindles if you want. It's on
okay.
the Amazon for Kindles. But I sell the physical book on my website too, and I prefer that people buy it off my website, because you wouldn't believe the cut Amazon takes for selling a book.
Oh, I would.
Wow.
Yeah, so I sell the books myself. My wife and I, we sell the book. You know, we have it all on the website. We package the books up. We put the invoices in. I mean, we do all the work. So, but it's a lot better than getting a $2 check from Amazon.
Again, everybody, make sure you go to SeanBroyles.com. Make sure you pick up his latest book, Just Give Up, Why Nothing in Life is Worth Trying at All, Ever. And make sure you find out where he's at. This is a funny man. He's got his tour going on, the Just Give Up comedy tour. Make sure you find this guy so you can check out some of the great things that he is doing. And, Sean, are you still working at Toys R Us, or you're done with that?
I'm done for now. But, you know, I'm not putting it out of the mix that I might be back. So, Toys R Us, just keep a job open for me in case this whole comedy thing don't work out.
Sean, it was a pleasure talking to you, sir. Nothing but the best of luck with your comedy tour.
I had a blast, man. Thanks a lot, and have me back anytime. I had a great time.
Definitely, definitely. Sean Broyles, comedian, and he has a great book out. Make sure you pick it up. He wants you to go to his website, so make sure you go to his website to pick it up, SeanBroyles.com. And again, the book is called Just Give Up, Why Nothing in Life is Worth Trying at All, Ever. And we want to thank Sean Broyles for stopping by. And again, make sure you go to his website, SeanBroyles.com. And also, we want to thank tight end for the Atlanta Falcons, Reggie Kelly, for taking time out for us. And again, make sure you go to his website, ReggieKelly82.com. Again, that's ReggieKelly82.com. And also, make sure you follow Reggie Kelly on Twitter at ReggieKelly82. And also Sean Broyles on Twitter at Sean Broyles. And make sure you follow this show on Twitter at Go4Again. And you can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgan, where you can listen to this great show and other great shows. And also, please, please, please make sure you follow the show on Twitter at Go4Again. I like to say a lot of funny things. And we're trying to get Jeremy to get his Twitter game up, but for whatever reason, he is very reluctant to do so.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully in the near future he'll step up his Twitter game and he'll join us on Twitter as well. But hopefully maybe Jeremy can tweet from my Twitter name for now. But Jeremy, get your Twitter game up and let's do big things. For everybody here at Go Forward and Jeremy Espy, our co-host, our beautiful, lovely co-host, we thank you guys all for listening. make sure again you follow the show on Twitter at Go Forward Again. See you later. Take care. Bye.